A big thank you to our sponsors because they make this show possible, and I hope that you support them the way they support us. Progress Software is the creator of the most comprehensive developer toolkit for building modern apps on the market today, Telerik DevCraft. With more than 1,100 Telerik.NET and Kendo UI JavaScript components and controls, you can easily build modern, high-performance web, mobile, and desktop apps, as well as chatbots. The toolset also includes reporting solutions, automated testing and productivity tools, and comes with a range of support options. New this year is a free online training program for all license holders. With this, alongside thousands of demos and source code available, comprehensive documentation, and a full assortment of Visual Studio templates, you'll be up and running with the Progress Telerik and Kendo UI controls in no time. Download a free 30-day trial today at Telerik.com/Hanselman. That's Telerik.com/Hanselman. Hi friends, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Nithya Ruff. She's the head of the open source office at Comcast and also an at-large director at the Linux Foundation. She has both MBA and a master's in computer science. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
My pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me.
So you work for Comcast, but you're the head of the open source office. And I think for people who use Comcast as their provider for television, for internet, don't necessarily think big giant cable company and open source, but there's quite an office there.
Absolutely. In fact, Comcast has been using open source since the beginning of 2000, when it started switching over from, just consuming proprietary products and operating them to actually creating software. For example, the X1 set-top box operating system that all of us use and the voice remote is powered by software that was created at Comcast. And open source is the way we innovate today at Comcast.
Wow. I just assumed, and I think when I think of a quote-unquote traditional company, like a regular company, I just assumed that they did everything in-house. But if you realize the scope of something so large, they would need operating systems to run the boxes and the switches and the networks. Like, it would be silly to build all of that from scratch.
Precisely. It is one of the largest networks in the country, as you can imagine, and everything from the content distribution network, which is Apache Traffic Control, which we created and donated to the Apache Foundation, to the set-top box software, which is based on the Yocto project, for example, which is an embedded Linux distribution, to other projects inside the company and contributions to things like OpenStack and Kubernetes really fuels the business. It is no longer, a non-IP or a non-digital business. It's completely a digital business. And we take pride in being very involved as a software development company in creating all of these solutions.
So you said that they've been doing this since 2000? That's like 20 years of open source almost.
Indeed. In fact, I work for the chief software architect for the company, John Moore. And John tells the story of how back in 2005 or 6, I think, he was contributing to HTTP at Apache. And that's when he realized that we needed to have a open source policy in place and an open source advisory council that would approve things to contribute back to open source. And frankly, there's been a ton of consumption. And we were, I think, doing about 13 contributions a year around 2013. And then this year, we will almost hit 200 contributions of original projects, but also, say, feature enhancements and bug fixes and things of that nature to open source projects.
Wow. Okay. So when you think of a quote-unquote traditional company moving towards open source, I assume that in 2000, there wasn't like instantly an open source practice office and policies in place. I know that I've been at Microsoft now for 10 years, and I feel like it's only the last 5 to 6 years that we've actually gotten our open source ducks in a row.
That's exactly correct, Scott. Many, many companies start out with a few engineers part-time, kind of advising and acting as mentors and support to other engineers in the company. And the legal team does part-time open source, you know, license checking, CLA checking, or approving contributions. And then you reach a scale and you reach a volume where you say, this is not scalable. This is not, you know, systematic. This is not something that can work across the company, especially when you have thousands of developers doing work and you have more and more consumption, contribution, and creation, right? So you then realize that you need to start a dedicated center of excellence or an office, if you will, often called the open source program office. That seems to be the standard term in the industry. Mm-hmm. And you start that, and that helps you then have someone who wakes up in the morning thinking about open source, puts consistent practices across the company, acts as a buffer between engineering and legal, if you will, puts policies in place, puts processes and tooling and automation in place. And I think Microsoft Open Source Program Office does a fantastic job, given the scale that you guys are and the work that you do. Just like us, the Open Source Program Office makes a huge impact.
Is there also education programs? Because one of the things that I bumped into recently with a large company whose name we would recognize was that they had a young engineer who accidentally, or for whatever reason, copy-pasted some code, and it got a little ahead of them to the point where it appeared that they had taken, you know, 40, 50 source code files and basically swapped out the copyrights and changed namespaces. When we... On its face, that would have been quite a dramatic thing, but it turned out it was ultimately an education issue of someone was prototyping and really didn't realize that they were pushing into the open world. And that was all worked out. But when we dug into it, this large company really didn't have a formal open source office and had no education for a new engineer.
That's so true. Education is the key. We, for example, have a mandatory training program that every single engineer, whether you're a contractor or a full-time employee with the company, has to take. It's a very, very short program. It's about, you know, 20 minutes, but it gives you the essence of some of the privileges that you get with open source, but also some of the obligations, some of the issues that you need to watch out for. And then we have a very, very active Slack channel, which helps us fend questions that come up, you know, things exactly like this. I'm about to do this. Should I do this or not? Or who should I contact to get this reviewed? The other thing we've done, and many companies do, is, you know, set up a portal or a website somewhere, which allows you to, if you will, act as a single source of information.
Yeah, we at Microsoft and at previous companies that I've had have often bumped into high-level executives that weren't into the idea. What do we tell them? What do we tell the audience who's listening to this podcast who says, well, it's wonderful that you know, she runs the open source office at Comcast, but I work at Big Co and we're open source hostile. Like, and my boss would never allow open source at our company.
That's very, very prevalent, less so these days. And essentially what I would say is one of the first areas that executives get is the legal aspect and the fact that there are risks that come if you don't comply with open source licenses, and that we have an obligation as a company to abide by the license obligations and, you know, pointing out the risk of a stop shipment of products or the fact that you can have a PR issue with the company or certain other, you know, issues with copyright non-compliance gets their attention. But the more important thing is they start understanding how this can speed innovation, cut time to market, because you have access to source code, you can take advantage of a number of different projects out there that will help you get innovation done faster. they also start understanding that this is the new way companies are innovating. They work across companies, they collaborate on problems and get more work done through external development and external engineering than if we could do it ourselves. And that we could use our scarce resources to focus on, you know, differentiation or doing things that are very uniquely us. And this definitely gets their attention, the business benefits of open source, the innovation aspects of open source, plus the fact that we do need to be a good citizen and respect the licenses.
Mm-hmm. So how do you have a little person, like the rank and file, who has just come to a company and they're excited about open source, but then they discover their company isn't so friendly. How do you gently manage up and encourage people? Do you point them to companies with successful open source offices?
There are so many wonderful resources these days. For example, the To-Do Group, which is todogroup.org, is a fantastic organization of open source program managers like myself across various companies. And we realize that many new companies are coming on board, starting new offices, or perhaps they're so small that they are not able to start offices, but they have part-time people who need this kind of support and help. We have guides, we have case studies, we have an organization Slack channel that you can join. I think that's one of the best resources that I have found. The second resource for people who want to convince someone or who want to, you know, understand a few things that they need to do in their open source office is to look at some of the best practices out there. Google, for example, started an open source program office many, many, many moons ago, way before all of us did. And they have actually open sourced all of their documents, their processes, their policies, etc. And you can go check out Google Open Source Office and you can find a lot of documents there as well. You can attend an open source event either run by the Linux Foundation or OSCON or the To-Do Group or, you know, All Things Open, and you can find an open source program manager like myself. We are very happy to mentor and support and help other companies who are starting their own open source offices.
Do you think sometimes that traditional companies think that open source is going to have them lose their IP, that they're going to go and build something and then that will give their competition an edge and then they stay out of open source because of that fear?
Yes, yes. In a previous company that I was with, those who don't know the benefits of open source often kind of think, why am I sharing this with others? You know, I'm giving my competition the benefit of this software that I have created. And then they start realizing that, A, they benefit a lot from other people's innovations too, and this is the right thing to do to give back. They also realize that carrying the burden of a forked project, if you will, you know, this customization patch that they're carrying is a heavy burden. It puts a lot of technical debt on them to integrate it back with open source mainline every single time they need to move forward to another release. They also start realizing that they can't partake of security patches, for example, which are usually available on the latest release if they are stuck behind in an old release and in a forked release. And frankly, they start kind of doing a better job thinking through what is it that is our competitive advantage and differentiation and what is standard. And 9 times out of 10, you find that most things are pretty standard stuff that are okay to open source and that are not patentable or IP or secret sauce.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point because I think so often people say, oh, I'm going to start a company. And then they'll say, oh, look, here's a complete operating system. I'll just make a copy of that. And like you said, I'll fork it. And they don't realize that now, rather than joining the community, they tried to copy it and then reproduce it internally. And now they're off on a fork that they're going to be tied to forever because they simply wouldn't join the community.
Precisely. And the very, very benefit of joining a community is the shared innovation, the fact that, you know, there are use cases that you could never have thought about, or there are competencies and areas that the project grows that you could never innovate on your own. And it's a huge advantage to be a part of a community moving things forward. And some of the challenges we're facing today are such big challenges and such interconnected challenges that one company alone can't do it. So this is a huge, huge part of engineering teams' innovation today. I am part of the software strategy and transformation group in Comcast's technology products and customer experience team. And we are the technical engine, if you will, behind the entire cable business. And we also support and help our brothers and sisters in NBC Universal, DreamWorks, the Comcast Ventures team, etc., on things open source.
Today's show is sponsored by Datadog, a cloud-scale monitoring and analytics platform. Datadog was built to bring clarity to complex dynamic applications in the cloud, on-premises, in containers, or wherever they run. With beautiful dashboards, seamless integrations with more than 250 technologies, and distributed request tracing, Datadog provides deep, end-to-end visibility into the health and performance of modern applications. You can visualize key metrics, set alerts to identify anomalies, and collaborate with your team to troubleshoot and fix issues fast. Try it yourself by starting a free 14-day trial today. Get started at bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Get a free t-shirt. That's bit.ly.com/datadogshirt. Thanks. What do you think about licensing? Let's just use a theoretical set-top box, some theoretical one, not necessarily Comcast. Someone could say, all right, well, here's a great operating system for the beginning of a set-top box, but we're going to put our special sauce on it. We're going to have our great interface, and we're going to innovate at the high level. But the licensing, whether it be MIT or whether it be something more like GPL that wants improvements pushed back into the product, a company might say, well, this license isn't friendly because they're going to want our special sauce, and that's going to take away our competitive advantage.
Yes. What companies are doing is using more business-friendly licenses these days, such as Apache, which helps them, you know, both protect their IP, but also make it available in the form of source code so that others can use it, contribute to it. The challenge sometimes with permissive licenses is that people are not obligated to contribute back, right? So you have to work harder at building community, at convincing people as to why it is important to contribute back. And frankly, I think the competencies that come with open sourcing is that you think more clearly about your IP, your competitive advantage, where that line begins and ends, and where things are commodity or things are standardized. You also start thinking more strategically about such things as, is this a space that I want to build an ecosystem around, or is there a gap in this space and I want to introduce a new standard, if you will? To me, open source has become the new way of creating de facto standards. You don't typically go through standards bodies anymore where you would write specs for years and years and years, and then you would convert that into an implementation. Now you're actually implementing, and through implementation, you're creating a standard.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I'd also had never really thought about the idea that having open source in your organization is a forcing function to make you think about your business and remind you, why are we in business and what is it that we're selling here?
Precisely. In fact, the success of an open source office really depends upon how well aligned you are to your business and understanding what the drivers for your business are, and hence which open source projects make sense for you to be involved in, how you need to build the drivers in your open source office, if you will, to the business objectives of the company. What I did at the open source office at SanDisk, where I was before, is very, very different than what I do from an open source office at Comcast. Yes, there are some, you know, similar functions, but the kind of communities I'm involved in, the kind of projects we release, the kind of competencies I'm building inside the company are uniquely created to help Comcast achieve its business objectives. And that's one of the things an open source program manager has to remember, is to balance the company objectives with community objectives at all times, and to make sure that they are doing right by both parties.
How does one decide at a large company whether they should put effort into open sourcing something? For example, Microsoft open sourced Microsoft DOS earlier this week, version 2 or 1. So all the original source code. And I think it was just a historical kind of a fun thing to look at. I don't think it's going to move the world forward. It's just interesting. But that would have required effort. There was a lawyer. There was paperwork. Like, they could have just not done that. What's to say Comcast wouldn't just say, who has the energy? Let's not even bother open sourcing this or that.
It is so interesting that open sourcing a project, many questions on the form that we ask the engineers to fill out, you know, actually it's quite a short form. One of the questions often is, what's the business reason why you're open sourcing this? And increasingly, one of the business reasons that I see is, I want to be transparent about the kind of work that we do, such that I can attract developers to the company. I want to show them the exciting things that we're doing, so that we can, you know, recruit people more effectively. And this is a tactic that many, many companies are using, where they open source projects and people get involved. They can cherry pick the developers that are involved in the project. They already have the competencies. They know the kind of work the company is doing. So that's become a big driver. Clearly, the other drivers are, this is a project that I need to grow, and I need additional competencies or additional use cases. I need other people involved in this. There are cases where, you know, companies may say, I just want to open source this because it benefits the world. It benefited me. It was useful for me. And we think that, you know, other people would also benefit from this. And so there are various business reasons we hear. Increasingly, though, recruitment, brand of a company from a technology perspective. For example, you know, as you said in your introduction, often people don't think of us as a technology company, but when you look at comcast.github.io, you see that we are contributing, you know, upwards of 200 projects, and we have a vibrant open source community. We have policies which support engineers working with open source. It makes them realize that we are a technology company, a software development company.
And are you finding that people will find out about the open source software at Comcast and they'll say, oh, I want to work there because they work on this project, or they made that thing happen?
Absolutely. I was at ApacheCon last week, and we talked about our Apache traffic control server, which we open sourced some years ago. And when people realize that, you know, if they want to work on a project that is at the scale that the CDN, Apache Traffic Control, is at, things like 30 petabytes of data that move through this every single day. I think something like 1.5 libraries of Congress worth of data every minute or something like that. It really kind of stuns you that you can then take your open source skills and work at scale and do interesting things that you could never have done, you know, on just an open source project outside the company. So you can just take those same skills and apply it to a commercial application that is very exciting and very innovating.
Yeah, and if you haven't been to comcast.github.io, it is a very large site with a lot of different projects. And they are, and this is me being surprised, that these are surprisingly generic, right? It's about moving things from place to place, which is the business that Comcast is in. And these are things that you could pick up and get involved in and incorporate into your projects. And you know that they work because they are used in such massive, massive scale.
Exactly. And Facebook says the same thing, which is that they usually put out things that they use in their own data centers. And that's what we do. Things like Trickster, which is a Prometheus dashboard acceleration program. We were using it inside to accelerate our own dashboards. And we said, you know, I think this is going to be useful to somebody else. Winyl DNS, which is DNS as a service, it's something that we use. And we said, I think it can be used by somebody else. It's also good for us to see these projects become, you know, more mainstream, become part of, you know, cloud native foundation or stacks at cloud vendors, because it benefits everyone. And it also allows this to become supported by, you know, a lot more people than just dependent upon one company.
What about the role of grants and in innovation funds to move things forward? How does that move things forward for the company? I can see how granting money moves things forward for a project.
I'm so glad you looked at our page and noticed that we do innovation grants. There are various ways to support research at universities and also, of course, open source projects. And we feel that support can come in the form of money. Support can come in the form of code contribution. We do a lot of evangelization, sponsorship of programs. I'll give you a specific example of a grant that helped. We saw that there were a couple of open source projects that were struggling financially, and their maintainers were not able to, you know, spend full time on the project because they needed to make a living as well. So we gave a $60,000 grant to a project, thereby allowing the project to keep the maintainer on full time and being able to, you know, do the work. There was another project where we donated money, and this does not come with any purse strings or, you know, any agenda. It just is purely to maintain projects that we care about, we depend upon, and so does the world.
And this is quite organized. Like, I know that some companies will give a grant here or there, but you've put together an entire Innovation Fund website at innovationfund.comcast.com where people can apply for grants, check on their grants, see the status of them, and know whether or not it's going to happen. And I've seen people take off the summer or take off a year to go and work on their passion project and move open source forward for everyone, sponsored by Comcast.
Absolutely. In all humility, it is not a huge amount of money like some companies do, but we are very thoughtful. We meet, I'm on the innovation grant committee as well, and we meet every 2 or 3 weeks, and we look at you know, all of the grant requesters, and we make sure that we are thoughtful about making sure that they get money.
Well, I think that people have started to realize that big parts of the internet itself were run by just men and women that are just chugging away by themselves. Like, remember OpenSSL? There was just a very nice gentleman working on it all by himself somewhere, and no one had really thought about that person until we needed them. And, you know, quality software costs money.
It's so important, Scott, that we sustain open source and that we pay attention to things that we depend upon, such as OpenSSL, exactly as you said, and that we have financial funding. The other aspect of sustainability that's extremely important to me is that we open doors to new people to come into open source, that we make it easy to onboard, that we make it easy to document projects, that we mentor new people coming in, especially mm-hmm. underrepresented people in open source. It is still a very, very much of dominated by certain communities, and women are less than 10% of open source, and Black and Hispanic and Native Americans are less than 5%. And so that's an area that I'm very passionate about and feel that we need to work much harder to both sustain, but also really be open as an open source community.
Indeed. And I'm glad that you're in a position of power where you can move the levers and help push everyone forward.
Yes, both at Comcast. The other hat I wear is with our Tech Women group. I'm also an ally with our LGBTQ community. And at the Linux Foundation, as an at-large director, I do not represent any company. I represent the community. And as a woman in tech, that's an area that I understand really well. And so I've worked hard with the rest of the board, we have almost five or six women on the board, which is outstanding. And so we've all been working very, very hard to make it much more inclusive, much more friendly as a tech organization.
That's a really important point. I just want to kind of double click on to make sure that people followed that. So you are a director. You're on the board of directors of the Linux Foundation, which has a lot of people representing companies, but you are an at-large director. So you are there not on behalf of Comcast, but on behalf of the community, which is really cool.
Absolutely. I take it very seriously. It's an opportunity and a platform to make a huge difference. It's an organization that is an umbrella to so many, many projects. And so we can actually set an example and do some things that change, you know, the community and sustain open source.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. I hope that people who are listening who don't have an open source office, who haven't had that formal introduction to open source at their company, might be inspired to go and talk to their leadership and make something like that happen.
Absolutely. The benefits are immense. And your company's brand, your company's ability to recruit are all enhanced. And so also your innovation. We are happy to help from the to-do group. And I'm happy to be a mentor as well in this area.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Nithya Ruff, head of the open source office at Comcast. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.